everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. We are finally here, January the 4th, 1999, the night that changed the tide in the Monday Night Wars, the night that Mick Foley won his first world title, the night the WWF thought a miscarriage was a good idea on a TV show. Various things to
baffling.
Get through. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I'm joined here by Sondra. Hi, Sondra, how are you?
Hi, Kenny. I'm doing pretty well. Kind of intrigued to talk about this episode. It was an episode. Things definitely happened. I'm trying to remember all of them, but it was, yeah, there were a lot of twists and turns. I'm so glad you warned me about the Terry thing before we went into this episode, because I don't think that I would have liked to watch it had I not been warned beforehand. But yeah, other than that, I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm good. You know, it's already January the 7th, and there's been more wrestling news than I think I've ever seen in the first 6 days of a year.
Right? I feel like I'm just, like, on tenterhooks for their announcement tomorrow to see, like, what's being made official and what all they're announcing. And I know, like, the Kenny Omega situation, I don't think they can really announce anything until his contract is up, but it's, I don't know. Everything's just so intriguing right now, and I watch Being the Elite, and I'm super, super hooked. There's a lot going on, Kenny.
Yeah, and then Dave Meltzer was saying that apparently ROH and New Japan's relationship is being kept and they're not working with AEW, which, but then the thing with that is, are they working you and really they are working together? Are the AEW guys going to show up at the Madison Square Garden show? I mean, if you take it all as gospel, for example, like say they have to get to the Garden show, like why you would in any way choose Ring of Honor to be your partner rather than AEW? Like, and then, you know, but somebody said to me on Twitter, or a few people had said, why would they leave a known entity like ROH? And
for something, you know, that technically doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, which my defense of that would be, well, ROH only got bigger on the watches of Cody and the Bucks. If you go and look at their attendances, the biggest attend shows they ever had were headlined by guys in the Elite. The Elite managed to sell out an 11,000-seater building with no TV. And also, people forget this, the ROH New Japan Supercard show, I remember the initial advertisements for that had Cody and the Bucks as the signature stars on the poster.
Yeah, yep.
So,
I mean, they pulled that stuff fairly soon after, but, I mean, originally that was the plan.
But then the thing was, like, so the idea, you know, not ROH, the Elite guys, they also draw in like hundreds of thousands of dollars of merch every year. I don't think New Japan ever do, ROH ever do. I guess the example is, I can't really think of one off the top of my head. I was going to make some sort of like attractiveness comparison, but that's not really fair. It's like if there was the person that you used to date who now has kind of got fat and a bit smelly, and there's this new model who likes wrestling as well and is hot and, you know, is willing to eat mac and cheese with you. This is not a direct comparison to me. There's no former fat, smelly people in my life. I don't know where this has gone. It's all devolved.
I don't know where this has gone. This has devolved.
My point was going to be, ROH now, ROH has always been, like, they've got Sinclair Broadcasting behind them and they've not really moved the needle as much as they should have by now. So I think you need the All Elite guys and New Japan to be working together. That needs to happen.
I mean, I think that would be ideal. I think that would be ideal for, like, storytelling, because I think there are still some stories that I would like to see revisited with some of the Elite guys. I mean, like, seeing Kenny Omega and Tanahashi again would be a great story down the line. I don't know how much they're going to be willing to work together, because I guess it kind of depends too. Do New Japan and ROH see the All Elite guys leaving and starting their own thing as kind of betrayal? Are they going to be, you know, like, upset about a new promotion trying to start up and be direct competition with them? Because I could see that being kind of upsetting to those promotions that have been home to those guys for so long. So it's, I don't know, there's a lot of moving parts and there are so many details that we still don't know, especially because, like, All Elite Wrestling has obviously been announced as a thing, but we don't really know any of the details. We don't know about television. We don't know about, you know, when, or I mean, we can kind of assume where Double or Nothing is going to be held, but we don't know when yet. there are all sorts of questions to be answered, I suppose. And like, I'm so anxious for tomorrow. Like, I cannot wait to... They're live streaming the rally too, right?
They're live streaming the rally, I think, on Instagram.
I think it was on Instagram and Facebook I saw, because I watched Being the Elite like an hour ago. And I think
it's 5 p.m. 5 p.m. Eastern.
Okay.
So 10 p.m. UK.
I'll be home. I'm going to watch it. I'm excited.
We are here to talk about this show, which is a very historic episode and a lot going on. We will delve into a lot of what's on it. But as always, the night before, we like to talk about what went on Heat. I also thought just for the next few weeks, I would bring back the results of Shotgun Saturday Night, because that still happens. So
does it?
Yep.
I didn't even know.
On January the 2nd, 1999, the first Shotgun Saturday Night of the new year, Gangrel defeated Tiger Ali Singh.
I bet that was a barn burner. Brian... As in, everyone wanted to burn the building down because they had to watch this match.
Brian Christopher and the Blue Meanie ended in a double disqualification. And in the main event, the Job Squad, which is Bob Holly and Scorpio, won a tag team four-way dance over LOD 2000, the Acolytes, and the DOA.
That sounds horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Sounds vile. On
this
Heat,
is
though,
why I'm not watching Shotgun Saturday Night.
This Heat episode was pretty fun, I've got to say. If you are watching the timeline, it's worth checking out. The Outlaws come out at the beginning. Road Dogg cuts a pretty good promo, actually, which is rare for him past his catchphrases. Where, you know, he talks about he was in that hardcore title match with Mankind, and The Rock kind of cost him, and he doesn't want to be that kind of champion. He doesn't want to be the champion that, like, gets it handed to him because The Rock helps him. He then challenges The Rock to a match for the hardcore title. Billy Gunn then talks about Ken Shamrock and how he wants the IC belt. The Rock and Shamrock come out and kind of cut a promo back to them. It ends up in the end that we get Road Dogg versus Test as the main event, but the Outlaws kind of hold their own in the opening segment, and then The Rock kind of gives them a bit of a rub, not in a weird way. There's a great moment backstage where Michael Cole's with Ken Shamrock, and Michael Cole says something along the lines of, like, "So, you know, Ken Shamrock, a lot of people think Billy Gunn could take you." And then he just shoves Michael Cole 25,000 feet to the left.
I mean, that is the appropriate response to such a dumb question. I don't understand why interviewers are like, "Hey, I bet this guy could take you, and I'm totally going to question your skill and ability in the ring." Ken Shamrock's not going to take kindly to that. He's Ken Shamrock. He explodes. He's insane.
And then that led to a brawl between Shamrock and Billy Gunn. George the Animal Steel had a surprise for the Oddities. The surprise was going to be that he was going to wrestle on this show in 1999. George the Animal Steel competes, and I use competes very loosely. He does his signature, biting the turnbuckle and everything comes out. And he ends up getting the win over Mosh in a minute and 20 seconds.
George the Animal Steel beats Mosh?
Yep.
Really? Wow. How old was George the Animal Steel at this point?
Let me check. He would have been... You can hear me frantically Googling here. He would have been 61 years old.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And still competing in a WWF ring.
But then after that, we got... this is a great thing. So Shawn Michaels is being interviewed at home by this, like, young guy from WWE.com who I have never seen him. I don't know who he is. His opening question to Shawn Michaels was... Again, I'm paraphrasing here. "So, Shawn, I mean, are you afraid that tomorrow night Vince McMahon might dismember you on Raw?" That's the question.
I remember when I was watching Raw, I think I texted you, like, there was a lot of talk of dismembering Shawn Michaels.
Which,
like,
is like...
If so that's not lover-scorned type behavior, I don't know what is.
Because the funny thing is, they have a pretty good story in that, you know, Shawn's pissed because he's not wrestling anymore, and then Vince brings him back as the commissioner, and then Shawn fucks up. You've already got a story there. I don't understand why that, like, so this, it's not good enough to say, you know, "Look, Vince has promised that if you show up tomorrow night, the corporation are going to take you out. Like, you're not, you know, you could be on the shelf for years to come," or something like that.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable thing to say. To say that you're going to dismember someone is just escalating things far beyond reason.
So we get that. Then we get Mark Henry versus Triple H. Of course, Triple H has to insinuate that Mark Henry is a monkey, which I
Because he constantly
do.
does that.
Because I don't think they're going to show in any highlight packages now. So,
Somehow, I don't think they will. But it happened. It happened. And we are watching it here on Retro Raw. Like, all of the allegations of Triple H being kind of super racist to certain people, it makes sense because look at this. Like,
And then
it's
we got, we
ridiculous.
also earlier in the show, Mosh called the Oddities retarded freaks.
Of course he did.
But during the match, Chyna comes out with Sammy, her friend. They're kind of chatting, I guess, scouting Mark Henry for sex. And that is enough distraction for Triple H to hit the pedigree for a 1-2-3 in about 2 minutes. We get to see Vince's training sessions again, which any excuse to watch that a second time is good for me. Val Venus faces Christian. Val ends up getting the win in a couple of minutes with the money shot finish, and then the lights go out and the Brood attacks. There's a bloodbath, and Kevin Kelly, who, you know, we have been big proponents of him here on this podcast, he says, "What does the bloodbath symbolize?" As if there's like hidden meaning in the
What does the
bloodbath.
bloodbath symbolize?
Blood! That's what it symbolizes,
Being covered in
blood.
blood is what it symbolizes. That's like all it is. What is it supposed to symbolize something else?
No idea. Then we got a super fun tag match with Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett in a non-title match against Ken Shamrock and the Big Boss Man. Debra gets up at the end, shows Boss Man her puppies, and then basically places Boss Man's hand on her ass. And that's enough for Jarrett to get the roll-up win. So Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett are now in contention for a tag title shot because they smartly got their manager to lure the Big Boss Man into potential sex that he's not going to get. And then the best bit is post-match, you see, like, without a microphone, the Big Boss Man, almost in a sort of charades way, explaining to Ken Shamrock what happened. Like, it is the
Like, is
best
he like
thing.
placing his own hand on his ass or something
Yes,
like that?
the whole shebang.
Oh
And
man, that sounds kind of delightful.
Shamrock's trying to be like, huh? You know, as if, like, this is. Anyway, it was good. Mankind comes out for commentary for the main event of Road Dogg and Test. Shane McMahon bolts. Mankind at one point, like, so Mankind comes out, but as he comes out, Road Dogg, this is so adorable, it's so good. And I'd never seen it. So Road Dogg, when he comes out, he's like, "Before I start the match, can I ask Mick Foley to get in the ring?" So Mick Foley gets in the ring, and he's like, "Look, you're technically still the hardcore champion, right? Like, I've only got the belt because you've not. So we should really do the intro together." And so he does the "Ladies and gentlemen."
Oh, so he's like inviting him to be a part of it.
So he was like, "We are the tag team champions of the world, Road Dogg, Jesse James, Mankind, Mick Foley." And he was like, and then he gives the microphone to Mick Foley to do the Billy Gunn bit.
To say suck it.
And Mick Foley goes, "And I've only got one word for you." Pulls Socko out, and everyone shouts Socko. It's the best. It is the best
Aw.
bit.
It's just nice to see Mankind having some friends. Like, even if they are not the friends that I would choose for Mankind, it's nice that people are being nice to him. I do not expect it to last. I still do not trust DX because they're cretins. But it's nice that they're being sweet to him at this point and being accepting and letting him be a part of it.
What also kind of shows that this, you know, like, so I've never seen this episode of Heat. So me watching Raw, you know, this even adds to the idea of DX being friends with Mankind. Because basically on this episode, what you get out of one of the stories is that Road Dogg feels bad that Mankind is no longer the hardcore champion and that he got a win over Mankind with help from The Rock. So he
It's
caught, you know.
actually good character progression from the Road Dogg.
So there's, you know, and he's calling out The Rock. He wanted a match with The Rock on this show. That's what he was asking for. He wanted to gain revenge. And then when he's having the match with Test in the main event, he calls Mick Foley in to do the entrance together. You know, so he's trying to. It's really good character work for Road Dogg that I didn't really know how much of it was there. And this one episode is the majority of it, so it's pretty interesting. But of course, The Rock comes out, and it ends up with Rock and Mick Foley and Road Dogg and Test all fighting each other's DQ, and then it's the best thing ever. They're going off there with this big brawl, and Kevin Kelly has to do the hard sell for Raw. And he goes, "Join us tomorrow night on Raw, where we'll see if Shawn Michaels gets dismembered." Off the air.
That's
immediately
we'll see
off
if a
the
man
air.
Is literally dismembered tomorrow night. Watch the episode, guys.
That is the sale of Monday Night Raw, and I was cackling. Because only Kevin Kelly can do it with that sort of sense of seriousness.
Right.
That, like, this is actually so good.
Well, Kevin Kelly's just at this point, he's like, I've seen it all, man. I've been graveside. There's been fire. I had a gun pulled on me in a house. Like, he's been around the block with WWF. So he, you know, someone's like, someone could get dismembered. He's like, yep, stands to reason.
Yep, it's a thing. So I guess the going into this episode, what we'll do is we'll not talk about Nitro and what was going on and all the stuff like that until we get to the main event. We'll leave it to there, and then it's a kind of succinct way to talk about it. But I guess before we talk about the show specifically, what did you know going in? Like, how much of this episode did you know that actually happened? I mean, did you just know Mankind won the title? Had you ever watched the match before? What did you know?
I don't even know if I've ever watched the match before. I've only seen the moment at the end when he wins it, and I had forgotten that Austin was involved. Basically, going into it, I knew that Mankind won the title at the end of the episode, and because you told me that a thing happened with Terry, I knew that this was going to be the episode where they start a miscarriage storyline with Terry, because that's a great plan in wrestling. Oh, I'm so angry. We'll get to it. But that was pretty much all I knew. I really didn't know much of the lead up. I didn't know how Mankind got a title shot, because that was one of the things that baffled me, was when you said, yep, it's happening this week. I was like, oh, well, how? Like, I don't feel like they've been building Mankind up to, you know, be a title contender at this point. I don't feel like they've really, I mean, obviously things are in place between Mankind and The Rock, but it seems like it really came out of left field, Mankind being champion, because he doesn't really feel like champion material. It doesn't, at least to me, it didn't feel like, you know, when Daniel Bryan was on the rise to become champion, it just kind of felt like, you know, Mankind is fun and we love him and we would like him to win things, but him actually being champion seems kind of strange. So yeah, pretty much I just knew that he won the title, and I didn't know any of the lead up or anything else like that.
Yeah, I guess let's get into the episode. So the episode opens up with, I actually thought, I want to give this credit, I think this is one of the most inventive or like original ways they ever opened a Raw, because they start off with this video package of like the relationship of Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon. Now, we have obviously created our own fictional version that adds into it, which is very hard to not think about ever again, because it's just there.
Especially with this video package playing.
Right? Because they're
like,
bringing
it's
in...
It's all about how much they love each other and their partnership.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, Vince picked Shawn over Brett. Vince, you know, there's the clips of Shawn winning the title and Vince and him dancing and hugging, all that sort of stuff. And then they show kind of, you know, him retiring and then the commissioner stuff. But as they're playing the video and it's all showing this kind of mushy Vince and Shawn Michaels thing, which, you know, you're used to seeing in video packages, we just hear a live microphone of Vince McMahon saying, cut that crap off, get that sentimental crap off the screen. And we cut the video package to the live arena. And I was like, well, of course that is what would happen if Vince McMahon is there and he's going to be coming out at the beginning of the show. Would he sit through this video package? Probably not. He would just be like, I own the company, I'm going to shut this down. And obviously you can't do that all the time, but I think it was just like a really nice jarring way to kick it off and just kind of set the tone for Vince being like, I'm not up for any of this stuff tonight. Like,
that makes sense. Like, I mean, it does kind of, to me, of course, seem like a McMahon just lording over the segment and just taking control of everything and being like, I need to be the star of the show.
I could see Tommaso Ciampa coming out on an NXT once he's lost the title and cutting it off. And
yeah,
it's the same.
I can definitely see that.
And that's that kind of thing is like, that's the kind of stuff that makes the TV shows worth watching, when you get the odd time, you can't do it all the time, but when you get stuff that like jars you from routine sometimes, and NXT's done that, Retro Raw does that, Raw and SmackDown today do not really do that, which is one of the bugbears, but
not a lot. They do every once in a while, they'll do something like that, but it's fewer and far between. I mean, NXT really has more of the chaos element. Like, you know, Nikki Cross coming out to interrupt a main event segment to be like, oh, by the way, I know who attacked Aleister Black. Like, that's the kind of stuff you see a lot more in NXT than you tend to see on Raw and SmackDown. I guess there are some fun interruptions, but
So we get Vince coming out with it was Kevin Kelly, by the way, our Lord and Savior, who was narrating the video, because he's the best.
Bless him. He is the best. Kevin Kelly for Hall of Fame, and I'm not even kidding.
So the corporation comes out with Vince. Vince promises that Shawn Michaels will not be attending the show because he's not brave. As Vince is talking, Briscoe ends up like attaching a Briscoe Brothers body shop sign to Kane's back without him knowing.
They're so mean to Kane. Kane is becoming the new Mankind for me, where I'm just like, be nice to Kane.
But also it's like, how do you not think this is going to end with you being murdered?
Right? Like, actually murdered in the ground.
Murdered,
because I feel like that's
blood.
Going to be Kane's intention, is to actually murder you on live television for ratings.
So that's kind of one of the backstories to what's going on.
And it basically signals, like, Shawn Michaels is going to show up.
And then as Vince is talking, we cut to seeing Shawn Michaels backstage. He comes out to his music, but he says he's not alone. And then DX come out, and they come out. And initially, I guess, I'm assuming that you were thinking what I was thinking at the time, and what goes on to kind of be played out is like, well, why would DX just go back with Shawn Michaels after what he did to them?
Yeah, I didn't understand it. I was like, why are they just going to be pals with him? This doesn't make any sense. Like, why is China there on the ramp just looking like, yep, we're totally behind Shawn Michaels now. This is a thing that's happening. Because Shawn Michaels was a dick to DX. Like, he dicked them around so much, that, like, a couple weeks ago. It doesn't seem like DX would want to do him any favors. Even if Shawn Michaels is now anti-corporation and DX is anti-corporation, it still doesn't seem like they'd be like, hey, all is forgiven because you were an absolute prick to us.
Which obviously plays out later in the episode, yeah.
There's too much alignment shifting in this episode again. Like, that just keeps happening.
Which, again, you know, I bring up a lot, mainly just because I know there's people who weren't watching the time, but, like, it was a different time in terms of you're facing opposition. Where, do you know that this... So, I'm trying to... Right, let me find this week's Raw and SmackDown. Hold on. WWE Raw ratings. So, this episode of Raw, do you know what the rating was for this one?
Big.
This episode of Raw did a 5.5.
Wow.
At the same time, was it Nitro did?
4.9?
A 5.
A 5, wow.
10.5 combined. And I think Raw right now does about a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like... That's how, so, and the reason I bring it up is not to be like, well, you know, there was, but it does shape how different the shows are, because you are every week competing with this other brand. You want to win the rating, you want to win the war, you want to, so they'll do things that are, sometimes work and sometimes don't, you know, sometimes they do stuff and you're like, why did they do that on TV? And you're like, well, I guess they were trying to win a rating. I don't really know how a miscarriage is supposed to win. We will get to it.
Yeah, that baffles me. Like, there's a lot of other stuff on this show that I don't understand how it's supposed to win a rating.
But I do think with this as an example is that, and look, I'm not the biggest DX fan in the world. Sometimes I guess I just try and add more of a kind of a here's the other side perspective to it,
which, because I don't like them so much.
Because you vehemently dislike them and yes. are very vocal about it. But I think that the idea behind this, and I think it's decent, is that I think you're supposed to think, why would DX be with Shawn Michaels after what he did? And I guess if you like them as a group, right, which a lot of people did, is maybe there's, because there's part of me when I was a kid, which, you know, I liked them enough, where I was like, Shawn Michaels and DX together could be pretty cool, but then there's the dynamic of, well, but he just fucked them, so what's going to happen? But I think the idea is to keep watching, because the more you keep watching, the more you're not switching over to Nitro. And, you know, and then with Nitro, we'll get to later on of what they decided to say to try and keep viewers, but ended up doing the opposite effect.
Yeah, because everybody actually wanted to see it.
But so Michaels comes out, he's with DX. Michaels says, you know, unfortunately for you, Vince, the contract that you gave me was ironclad and you can't fire me. He then shows a clip of when Vince and Shane held the draw where Vince was revealed as number 30, wishing that he was number 2. And Shawn was like, well, you know, you are a WWF superstar now, so I'm going to give you your wish and you're going to be number 2 in the Royal Rumble after Stone Cold Steve Austin. I remember watching this as a kid being like, oh my God, Vince McMahon is going to enter the Royal Rumble at number two? Like, because at the time...
when Stone Cold Steve Austin is number one, so that's like...
And at this point, we'd never seen Vince in the ring, really, right? We've seen him like do the odd thing here. They're like...
I was going to say, we definitely saw him in a quote-unquote match.
But I mean, like, we've not seen him in a long-form thing in any way.
No.
So, like, at the time, like, I was so... And I was like, Austin and Vince is number one and two? And I, like, I don't care if it... I desperately wanted Vince McMahon to win the Royal Rumble. Like, I was
Did
just like,
you?
Please. Because I was still... I still kind of had my sort of, like, PTSD parts of, like, you know, Vince kind of didn't do anything wrong, and Austin did rile him up for ages. And then I just loved the idea of Vince McMahon winning the Royal Rumble because it was so bonkers. And then the vignettes were really funny. So I was kind of, because even as a kid, you know that Vince McMahon is not going to be the WWF champion. But at the same time, the idea of Vince winning the Rumble, I guess, was more appealing to me as a kid because it was just bonkers.
Because it was like, this seems like a thing that shouldn't happen or whatever. Like, I hate the idea of Vince McMahon winning the Royal Rumble. Like, I really don't like it at all. I think just because, again, like, he's an authority figure, and I don't want an authority figure to be winning the Royal Rumble. Like, that should be something that's going to build another star. And I don't know. Like, the vignettes are funny. I think the fact that he's in the Rumble is funny. But, like, for him to be entering at number two, I'm like, do we have to see Vince McMahon in, like, the entire Royal Rumble now? Because that's not something I want to see.
But, again, I mean, maybe... there have been times when we've done this podcast, and there's been various ones on all sides, really. There's been times where there's been something that you thought was going to be terrible that you thought was good. In execution.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and that's the thing. Like, right now, I can say, like, the idea of that sounds horrendous to me, but I don't know how they execute it, right? And I haven't, you know, I haven't seen the 1999 Royal Rumble. I do know who wins it, but I haven't seen the 1999 Royal Rumble.
It's funny because, like, I know there's some stuff leading up to that you don't really know about, which you're going to love. And also, like, I mean... all I will say is Austin and Vince are kind of the highlights of the Royal Rumble match, so don't be expecting a lot of great...
Like, the two that I don't really like.
Like, because, my God, the 1999 Royal Rumble, Jesus. Anyway.
We'll get there in a couple weeks. A
couple weeks we're going to get there.
What is the date of the Royal Rumble?
I think it's the 24th.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was curious how close it was. So that's only 3 days before actual current day Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm. So the Thursday of that week. So I'll just finish the segment. So basically, Michaels makes Vince number two, and then Michaels promises a surprise for Vince tonight before the show's over that will drive him stone cold crazy. Which, again, I guess within the parameters of ratings, is like he's essentially telling you tonight you're getting Austin at some point,
mm-hmm.
Which is what it's about. But I guess.
And people are going to want to tune in to see Austin. So my whole thing with the segment, right, like with Shawn Michaels saying, my contract is ironclad, you can't fire me. Also, I have jurisdiction over all WWF superstars except for Stone Cold Steve Austin, which is weird, right? Like when Vince McMahon made Shawn Michaels the commissioner, it's like, oh, you have jurisdiction over every single member of the roster, except for not Stone Cold Steve Austin, because I get to fuck with him, right? So it's such a weird stipulation, but it's almost too, like... much contract talk and not enough hey, let's get to the wrestling. Like, there's a lot of like talking about, oh, but I fooled you with this legalese, and there's a part of me that just loves that too, though, right? Like, I kind of love the loopholes and just like Shawn Michaels being super pedantic and being like, oh no, I can totally make you number two. But it's
like, I live for the idea of someone going, technically you had to sign a superstar contract. So I now, you know, I get to do this to you. Because mm-hmm. It's almost like they just, like, Vince is so maniacal that he, because he was like, I'll deal with Austin, because that's the only person I want to fuck with. But then,
Because Vince McMahon is obsessed with Austin. Like, he has these blinders on.
Do you think he wants to fuck him, or is it purely rage?
I think he definitely wants to rage fuck him.
Do you know, you do in your life... at least once go through... I mean, I think you want to rage-fuck Dolph Ziggler.
I don't want to rage-fuck Dolph Ziggler.
I think you totally would. I don't want you to admit it, but I think you would. I think you definitely want to rage-fuck Shane McMahon.
I might want to rage quit actually. That's fair. That's a fair point.
I just want to know, see if that ever happens. You need to make me one promise. You need to tell me, like, put a timer on as to how long it takes you to make him sweat. Because he sweats during promos.
Like, he does. He really, really does. I mean, that's the thing. I would worry about that a little bit. I'd be like, are you okay?
And then can you imagine how like offended you'd be if he did not sweat for you?
Right? I'd be like, excuse me.
So anyway, so we open with that. We're setting up a lot for the show. We're setting up the Austin and Vince are 1 and 2 in the Rumble. Michaels is saying we're going to get Austin later on, essentially. Not a good start for Vince McMahon.
No, I think what we've learned is that 1998 Vince McMahon, because he made the contract in 1998, so it's still 98 Vince I'm talking about. Like, he is the worst at contracts, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, anticipating potential loopholes. Because, I mean, the same thing with Stone Cold Steve Austin being able to, like, be rehired and be back and, like, get his title rematches and all that kind of stuff. Like, Vince McMahon is terrible at this. If he wants to fuck with everyone, he totally could. Like, I don't know if Jerry McDevitt's just on vacation or what, but he really didn't think this contract with Shawn Michaels through. Like, Vince has been scorned by Shawn Michaels before. Did he really think that Shawn was going to be loyal to him?
You know, love's tough, Sondra.
It's true. It's a complicated world.
So let's move on because we've got a lot to get through. So we get Steve Blackman versus Ken Shamrock. Oh, good God.
It's fun enough.
It's Steve Blackman. Luckily,
I kind of love him.
The title's not on the line, so you don't have the dread of Steve Blackman with the championship. But in the end, Billy Gunn ends up giving Shamrock a famouser, allowing Steve Blackman to get the pinfall on him. And then during the match, out walks Mr. Charisma, Dan Severn.
To show up and wear a neck brace and look like he does not want to be there.
And he gets in the apron, which is what gives Billy Gunn the chance to get the Famouser on Shamrock. And it costs him the match. So Blackman gets the pin. And it's a thing.
I think it was funny. I don't know. There's just Steve Blackman and Dan Severn are just so interesting to me because Steve Blackman is a charisma void, right? Not in a good way. He's always kind of like, oh, Steve. Like, I love him because he's so shit, right? But, and I don't think his wrestling's terrible, but he doesn't emote. He doesn't know how to move his face or have an emotion. And then Dan Severn shows up and looks so bored the entire time. He just, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's actually talking to commentary, being like, no, I don't want to be here. Like, I don't understand why I'm here to just wear a neck brace for like 2 minutes and that's all I'm doing. And why can I not be at my home? But for some reason, I just find Dan Severn very intriguing. I really, really like him. And I can't put my finger on what it is. It's just somehow something about Dan Severn works for me. But also, I think they replayed the heat clip with Billy Gunn and Ken Shamrock somewhere around this point because they were kind of like setting up the story that there is something going on between them. I am all in on Billy Gunn and Ken Shamrock. I really am. Like, I'm kind of excited about it.
It's good. It's better than I remember it being. Not that I remember it being bad, but it's good.
I just feel like, I mean, they're both good wrestlers and they could actually put on something really good if they're given a chance. Like, I'm sure we're going to get plenty of raw DQs and whatnot, but I mean, Ken Shamrock versus Billy Gunn at a pay-per-view for like 15 minutes, I would be okay with that.
Well, also, it kind of shows that already, for whatever reason, the New Age Outlaws are actually more compelling as singles wrestlers.
They are. Like, I mean, as a team, they're just kind of there.
Yeah. I'm not gonna give anything away, but you might get a pay-per-view match coming up with Shamrock and Billy Gunn.
I mean, it does seem to be going that way, and I would very much like to see it. I hope it's not one of those matches that, you know, I'm like, oh, it's going to be really good, and then it sucks, because that would be sad.
It would be sad. So then we get my favorite plug ever. The Rock and Vince McMahon are on the cover of Southwest Spirit magazine. So whenever you're in a
like
Southwest
the airline
flight...
the airline magazine. Like, what the hell?
We see Shamrock and Billy Gunn brawling backstage. So if referees are trying to separate them. Out comes Mankind. He comes out, says he wants a WWF title match against The Rock at the Royal Rumble because he beat him at Rock Bottom. He calls out Vince. Vince comes out and kind of runs down, you know, Mankind and how pathetic he is and he just wants to please the people. Vince says Mankind does not deserve to be the number one contender because he hasn't paid his dues and he'll probably never wrestle for the title. But instead, because Vince is a benevolent individual, he is going to give Mankind a chance to qualify for the Royal Rumble and face Triple H, and the guest referee to officiate the match will be Shane McMahon.
Of course it's not going to be an impartial referee, because we've never seen Shane be an impartial ref. I mean, we have, like, he was a referee for a couple of matches, but
I do wonder though, if you were watching this and didn't know the ending, that would have probably infuriated you a lot more, because you wouldn't have known that in the end Mankind gets
his shot and actually gets to win the title. Yeah, like, I mean, this is more infuriating deck stacking, right? And it's that balance that we always talk about on Retro Raw, like how much corporate shenanigans, like how far is too far with it, to the point where I just kind of get sick of it. And like, this is really teetering on the edge for me, like with all of the, you know, like, oh, we're going to put Shane McMahon as the guest referee. And so obviously Mankind doesn't really have a chance to qualify for the Royal Rumble. If Shane McMahon is going to be the guest referee there, you know he's going to screw Mankind, because Shane McMahon, when he is being an impartial referee, doesn't even try to make it look like he's calling anything down the middle. Like, he just flat out refuses to count pinfalls and will do fast counts, like, immediately or whatever. We know this about Shane McMahon, so you kind of know the outcome of the match before it even happens.
Whereas I live for shenanigans. This is right up my alley. I'm like, I would take these a million times over than more modern day stuff. Like, I like when there's, but then I mean 1999, if you don't like it in 1998, I mean 1999 is just it's so much worse.
I mean, like, I'm not saying that I'm anti-shenanigans. I like shenanigans, but I like a level of shenanigans. I don't like it when it's all shenanigans.
I feel like they might give you so many shenanigans that you're kind of beaten into submission with them eventually. You just go, fuck it. Let's just have two referees. Why not? We see China and her friend Sammy backstage talking. It leads into Mark Henry versus Goldust. Mark Henry faces Goldust, and then
yeah, what's the deal with, like, China has this friend or whatever, and they're like, oh, China has a friend. Like, why should it surprise everyone that China has a friend?
I don't know. But, I mean, yeah. So China has this friend, Sammy. Any thoughts on their friendship?
Did they actually name the friend?
No, but that is her name.
Okay. Like, I had no idea who it was. I was going to ask you. I mean, I don't know. They seem to be pals enough. I mean, Sammy basically just stands there and doesn't do a whole lot. So I don't really understand. I mean, obviously, like, China says more after Mark Henry's match and whatnot. But so far, it's just like, I mean, is she meant to be a distraction?
So they come out and they're distracting him. And then Goldust ends up getting disqualified because he hits Shattered Dreams, which is the most problematic finisher of all time, because it just gets
like,
disqualified.
Why?
Because the curtain call was a good move. Anyway, but China ends up coming in the ring. She confesses that Mark Henry is too much man for her. So she's brought her friend Sammy here. They're going to take a load off of his mind. He literally faints at the offer. So, Sandra, over to you.
I mean, what even is this? I don't understand. Like, why? When China is, like, finally starting to come around to being with Mark Henry, right? They seem to have kind of a budding romance that started out kind of problematic, but they seem to be making it work, the two of them. And now China's, like, the best idea is to bring a friend or something. And Mark Henry, who, I mean, was literally, like, whipped and, I don't know, like, he had two ladies on him before and seemed to be enjoying it, even though I guess I'm meant to believe that he does not enjoy the bondage situation as much mm-hmm. as I thought he did. But, like, it's not like he's never attempted to be with two women before, but now, like, China's bringing this friend and Mark Henry just faints at the idea. I don't understand what's happening here, Kenny. And how is Mark Henry too much man for China? Look at China. She's fucking incredible.
I am
if anything, he should be intimidated by her.
I can't really say anything just now.
Well, that's not helpful. I don't understand what's going on. They're like, oh, China has this friend. Who's this friend? It's a friend. Oh my gosh. Like, she's not allowed to have friends or something. I mean, she has plenty of friends. We've seen her be pals with DX. It's nice that she has another friend. Apparently, she wants the friend to help her sex her boyfriend.
It will all become clear.
More power,
Sandra,
to you.
It will all become clear.
I think I have a guess as to what this is, but I'm not going to say it. But, like,
okay,
if that's where it goes.
What, no, oh, what's your guess? Come on. I'm not going to tell you whether you're right or wrong. What's the guess?
Is it, like, a trick somehow?
No, it's not a trick.
Okay, good.
It's something else. Anyway, we see that Jesse Ventura has been inaugurated as Minnesota's governor earlier that day. I actually asked him about that in the interview that goes up with later this month on our YouTube channel, where I ask him about he ends up returning to the WWF in 1999, what led to him coming back. So we will, yeah, that's just a little plug for that.
I'm looking forward to that interview.
Dennis Knight is in a cellar, chained and screaming.
He sure is.
Is that kind of, like, how you, is that kind of how you feel when you're watching one of his matches?
Exactly. Exactly that's how I feel when I'm watching one of his matches. And I don't need to see him chained up screaming on my television. Like, I mean, I think it's later on the acolytes come and start beating him up or whipping him or whatever. And, like, I am not one to question their proclivities, but if they could do all of that off of my television screen, I think that'd be amazing.
That's fair. So
I just don't like any of them, so I don't want to see them.
We get Tess versus the Godfather. The Godfather does not offer Tess any of his hoes. So, you know, he means business. They brawl. Referee loses control of the match because, of course, it's 1999. So, you know, why would he be in control? And then Val Venus runs down to fight with Tess. And they have a... Obviously, they have an issue from last week where Tess cost Val Venus his hardcore title shot. So, Val Venus versus Tess. There's a program.
That's certainly a program. That's certainly a thing. I mean, it is not a thing that is aimed for me at all. Test is bad, right? Like, I'm not just making that up.
No, he is bad at this point.
He's very bad.
He gets better.
And, like, he's almost wrestling with the smoothness of Tiger Ali Singh at this point. Like, I don't think he's quite as bad as Tiger Ali Singh, but he's pretty bad. And he's not a delightful weirdo in the way that, like, Kurgan is. So I don't love Test for being bad. He's just bad and boring and bland and there. And maybe I'm just having too many big cast flashbacks. I don't know. But I'm not a Test fan so far. And Test versus the Godfather was not great. And, I mean, I guess at least we didn't get too much Godfather shenanigans. Like, okay, so here's my thing with the Godfather, though, right? He always says pimping ain't easy, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's his thing. But it seems pretty easy. Like, all he does is he comes out and he finds these women to accompany him to the ring. It doesn't seem like he has difficulty finding women to accompany him to the ring or anything. And then he just offers them up for free and they just go with it. Like, it doesn't seem like he's doing that hard of a job with his pimping career.
I mean, he was originally going to have the phrase, pimping is problematic. But he...
Would have been more accurate.
He had to forego it. Up next, though, we see Shawn Michaels having a chat backstage with DX, so you're still meant to believe that they are fine, which leads us into the Royal Rumble qualifying match. Shane McMahon's the referee, Triple H versus Mankind, China's on the outside. Not really much to say about the match, because it doesn't really go that long, but Triple H and Mankind are, like, it feels like they're wrestling each other, but they don't really want to. They're kind of like, they have to. And then,
well, because, like, they have an alliance, right? And that's part of Vince fucking with Mankind here, is, like, you're going to have to fight your pal, and my son is the guest referee.
And then, so Triple H, Mankind's kind of dominating, and then Triple H hits a sunset flip from the apron. Shane McMahon, after kicking Mankind's hands away from the ropes, does a very quick three count and awards Triple H the victory. Triple H gets on the mic and says to Mankind, look, you know, basically he says, you know, I don't want to win like this, but it's business. You know, I have to take the shot where I can. But then as
Shane... It's not personal. This is just business.
But then as Shane McMahon is gloriously gleeful at this, Triple H does say, but Happy New Year, and then pedigrees Shane. So Mankind basically snaps and puts Shane into this kind of intricate submission move. He's going to break his shoulder. Vince and the Stooges come out. Vince is very, very worried about Shane and his what's going to happen to him. And then Mankind says he's changed his mind. He doesn't want a title shot at the Royal Rumble. He wants one tonight. Vince is very hesitant. And then as Mankind cinches back a little bit, Vince agrees to it. And then Mankind also wants it to be no disqualification. Vince, very much under duress, also has to agree to that. So Mick Foley has got what he wants, and then as Shane and Vince are walking up the ramp, in a kind of great piece of storytelling, The Rock comes out like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, you're putting like, me why in... do I have to do this? What is happening?
Like, and then, they've, you know, they've got this kind of, to because we're now in the territory where Rock is getting his pec surgery. So we see him in this weird workout gear for like a month.
Oh, is that when this happens?
But the way they explain it here is pretty fun, where they kind of go, Rock doesn't have his gear because he wasn't going to be wrestling. So, but I'm curious what you thought, because this is obviously the build to Mankind getting the title shot. They try and stack the deck against him. They put him in the match. Shane helps him lose. And then Mankind kind of goes out in business for himself, puts Shane in the submission, and makes Vince agree to give him a title shot and make sure it's no DQ. What did you make of the segment?
It's one of those situations where, again, I don't think Vince McMahon is very smart, because there's every chance that, I mean, Mankind's kind of a good person at this point, so he probably wouldn't have broken Shane's arm anyway. It's not like when Seth Rollins was threatening to like break Edge's neck and John Cena had to like reinstate the authority, right? Like, it reminded me of that, but I think this was done a lot better. And it's interesting to see Vince actually have emotion and care for Shane, because it almost seems like maniacal Vince McMahon would normally be like, oh, it's fine. Like, you can break my son's arm. Like, he'll get better. But he actually cares for Shane here. So that's an interesting piece of character work on the part of Vince McMahon, I thought. And it's smart of Mankind. Like, it is smart of him to attack Shane and then demand a title shot. I like seeing Mankind stand up for himself. I like seeing Mankind kind of get one up on the authority. Like, it's nice to see him actually get a thing and get awarded a thing. And like, obviously I knew that he was going to win the title at the end of the night, but it is a good piece of storytelling, and it sets up the main event. And it would definitely, like, if I were watching at this point and then, you know, the tide shifted and all of a sudden, like, I'm so raging that there was a fast three count, Mankind's not in the Royal Rumble because he absolutely deserves to be in the Royal Rumble. Obviously, like, the whole deck stacked against Mankind and then him kind of getting one up, it did work.
Yeah, I was curious how I was going to feel going back, and I think this is just like the Mankind and Vince stuff on this show is great. Like, it's
because,
so
again,
good.
Like, Mankind McMahon is my favorite McMahon story, right? Because I think that Vince McMahon being the cult leader, and I mean, Mankind even calls him dad. He's like, so what do you say, dad? And it's a callback to the fact that, like, Vince McMahon lured in Mankind. He lured him in with false promises and, like, gave him the hardcore title, which was basically just rubbish to him. And he's been such a dick to Mankind, manipulating him. And now Mankind's like, no, I am out from under your evil spell. I am going to stand up for myself, and I'm going to get what I rightfully deserve that I've been screwed out of so many times. It's kind of lovely.
So, and I love the touch at the end of The Rock just being pissed at Vince about agreeing to this, because it makes sense.
Because he should be. Like, yeah, he should be pissed. He wasn't supposed to defend his title tonight, and in a no DQ match of all things.
Then we have D'Lo Brown versus Edge. Edge, for some reason, is coming out to his own music, but that's what. So anyway, D'Lo's there, and then Terry and Jacqueline come out to the ring. Terry apparently is visibly pregnant to anyone but the viewers, like, because she does not in any way look pregnant. Like,
she does not. Nope.
And like, I've had a fair few friends who are like similar physique to Terry, and they're very petite, and like, you show on the belly specifically, it's more obvious sometimes, because like, you don't have any weight anywhere else that's obvious. So like, she's not pregnant anyway.
No, well, because they're saying that she's like several months along, right?
No,
she,
I mean, come on.
No, that's what they said on commentary, though. They were like, she's several months pregnant. And so I don't know if we're meant to believe that that's like 3 months or like 4 months. But I mean, if she's 4 months pregnant, she would definitely be showing at this point. Like, for sure. Because like, one or two, fine. Like, you'd probably be a little bloated and whatnot, which you could tell in the types of dresses that Terry wears. She does not in any way look out of shape or bloated or like she's retaining water or anything like that, right? Like, she looks incredible because she's a gorgeous, gorgeous woman. And so for them to be like, yeah, she's months along in her pregnancy, it just does not really seem accurate. Like, couldn't they use a prosthesis to make her appear even slightly pregnant?
So Terry and Jackie come out, and then Terry.
I was so mad, by the way, like, because I was excited about Edge and D'Lo Brown, and I was like, yes, Edge versus D'Lo Brown is like the match out of my dreams of Retro Raw, right? Like, two of my favorite performers. I cannot wait to see them go at it. And then Terry and Jacqueline came out during Edge and D'Lo, and I was like, no, why does this have to ruin Edge versus D'Lo Brown? Why does it have to be this angle? I'm so mad.
So Terry distracts D'Lo, and then when D'Lo goes after her, she falls off the steps very unconvincingly. I've got to say, like, look, I do not blame Terry Runnels, because, like, the fact that anyone comes up to me and says, can you do this miscarriage angle? But, like, she definitely didn't commit to it, and I don't blame her, because why the fuck would you commit to this?
Mm-hmm.
This is also the... This is the night that actually began the feud of Vince Russo and Jim Cornette.
Really?
Jim Cornette has said so many times on DVDs, he said it to me when we've just been sitting, like, this was the angle where he was just like, fuck Russo. Fuck this guy.
And rightfully so.
And, you know, he was taught, and what he said was like, because the idea is in wrestling, for if you're doing it well, what you're doing should be selling a ticket in some way, right? Whether it's somebody's funny, or you hate somebody, or you love somebody, like, that's the goal, right? Is that you are making people invested enough that they want to invest in you or your promotion or your character or whatever it is that you do. And what Cornette said was, you know, well, what are you selling with a miscarriage? Like, you're not selling a ticket, you're not, nobody's over from it, and then what you're also doing is, on top of all that, that you've not done anything, you're also making people who have either went through it or know people who have went through it just feel really uncomfortable and annoyed. So
yeah, because, I mean, and watching it play out the way it plays out here, like, she falls off the steps or falls off the apron or whatever, and she starts immediately, like, writhing in pain. I'm kind of amazed they didn't actually have blood coming out from between her legs, because that seems like something that they would do, right? So, like, that was the small mercy, was that they weren't actually showing her bleeding. But it...
It's those small victories, Sandra.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, they didn't go as far as they could have. They went way too far here, though. And, like, I just don't understand. It seems to be like Vince Russo's theory is basically write the show like a soap opera, right? And that can work in wrestling. It really can. Like, wrestling is very much in the vein of, like, comic books or soap operas with long episodic storytelling. But just because you're writing it like a soap opera doesn't mean that you need to have all of the soap opera elements in it, right? And then, like, seeing Terry fall on, like, the way she starts writhing around in pain, and then they, like, carry her out on a stretcher and they have, like, a sheet around her and stuff. It all is just very, very uncomfortable, and I don't know who's supposed to benefit from it. Like, I agree with Jim Cornette there, because it doesn't seem like it's getting... I mean, I guess maybe we're just supposed to feel sympathy for Terry? Like, I mean, I've liked Terry and Jacqueline... kind of the whole time, except they've kind of flattened out and become a lot more one-dimensional lately. But it's just, am I supposed to feel sympathy for them now? Because I thought they were supposed to be just like mean ladies who beat men up, and I thought they were supposed to be heels, but I don't really understand. And it's just not something that I want to watch. It's uncomfortable. Like, I've never been in that situation myself, but I know a lot of people who have, and this would be very difficult viewing for them. Like, I think it's something Cornette has also said, is like, don't put someone's worst trauma on TV and expect them to cheer it. Like,
it just, it does not make any sense. You know, it's up there. There's a lot of stuff over the years where, like, people will just be like, why this as a thing? And I think this is right up there.
I just really don't understand what the point was supposed to be, or like where it goes or whatever. Like, I mean, Terry's not even an active performer, so I just don't understand what the point of this is. So I guess
she's clutching her stomach as if she's gone through a miscarriage, and this is not the only miscarriage we ever get to see on Raw. There's one more.
No, so. There's another one coming.
Because
of course there is, because wrestling is wrestling.
So we get. I also love the idea that Vince Russo calls people marks for watching a wrestling show at 3 a.m, but he writes miscarriages.
I for fuck's sake, like, this man just, I just don't understand how, in, like, I'm trying to access the part of my mind that can try to think like Vince Russo, and it's very difficult because I just do not agree with him on a whole lot of things. Is he just thinking that like the shock value of a miscarriage is going to intrigue people? Like, because you aren't supposed to show that on television and you're showing that on television, so people will be intrigued. Because, like, this is the kind of thing that makes me surprised that they kept winning the ratings war on this night, because like a lot of this episode isn't that good.
So say again.
I said a lot of this episode really isn't very good, and it makes me kind of surprised that they won the ratings war against Nitro. Like, I don't know what was going on Nitro, but like I'm watching Terry Reynolds have a miscarriage, or I'm watching, like, I don't know, Mark Henry get introduced to China's friend, or like none of that is all that compelling.
I thought this was a really good episode of Raw. But I think the stuff that you're saying wasn't good, but like to me the big stuff that they did was all good. So I would disagree with you on that front, but I wouldn't disagree with you that these segments were bad, for sure. We get Kane coming out though with Shane McMahon, Jerry Briscoe, and Pat Patterson. Kane's still got the sign in his back. Shane gets in the mic and books an impromptu handicap match with Kane against the Stooges, because it was anyone who was remotely responsible for Mankind's attack on him would be held responsible. There's a great moment where Patterson tries to offer Kane a cigarette. It is one of my favourite things ever. The Stooges then take some choke slams. Kane teases choke slamming Shane, but Vince stops him at the last second. And I guess the thing is here that Kane is their corporate monster, and the Stooges got their comeuppance for, I guess, not saving Shane.
Yeah, I mean, this was fun because the Stooges kind of bumping around and stuff is always going to be a good time, and Kane just being an evil, evil monster is always going to be fun. I think it was at this point in the show, and then also earlier when Mankind was demanding the match against The Rock. What confuses me about this is Vince McMahon is out here making matches, right? Like, he made the match with Mankind and The Rock, and he made this match with Kane and the Stooges. Like, what is Shawn Michaels doing backstage that he can't interrupt this and be like, no. You're not the one who's in charge of commissioning these performers and making matches. Like, Shawn Michaels could override him at any time. And I'm not saying that that's necessarily what I would want to see, because that would just be like more authority bickering. But I just don't understand the corporate structure of the show and why we had a whole segment at the beginning with Shawn Michaels talking about his contractual rights and obligations and powers when none of that plays out throughout the rest of the show. Like, that kind of takes away from it for me too, and made me enjoy the opening segment less in retrospect, because I'm like, okay, if your whole thing is that you are in charge of all of the WWE superstars, like, why is Vince McMahon still out here making matches, and why are you just okay with that?
I know what you're saying, but I do feel like if I applied that to every wrestling show I ever watched, I would just never enjoy it. I feel there's always those kind of stuff, like whether it's NXT, whether it's Impact, whatever it is, I think there's always stuff like that that happens, but I guess it's
Well, I
just.
think my criticism of this episode is that they made it such a story point at the beginning, and then it doesn't play through.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I'm not thinking about it as much. So I wish I could come up with a comparison straight off the top of my head. I'll maybe try and come up with one for next week, but I think that that didn't come to me when I was watching it back then or now. It just kind of it was. But then like sometimes I'll think to myself, if I was thinking of this in a real sporting way, like why would someone be behind a curtain waiting for the other person to go past them to go out and then come out a minute later?
Well,
Like
of course. I mean, like,
that.
you can't nitpick everything, and I'm not trying to nitpick like everything about the show,
But I guess
but it's
sometimes it
just
comes
like,
down to if you'd invested in characters, you kind of let that stuff go. And you're not invested in a lot of these characters. So if you're
no, I
not
don't like
invested,
them.
so if you don't like them, then I guess you're going to pinpoint the things that I guess you would let go if you liked some of the people, but you don't, so it's more apparent.
Well, and I mean, it's the fact that they've made it such a story point, and they've made it such a major plot point that if you're going to present it as the most important thing on the show, then you need to at least be consistent in the most important thing on your show, for me.
Okay. So Kane beats up the Stooges and Shane. Not Shane, sorry, he almost beats up Shane. Then we get Dennis Knight begging for the Acolytes to help him. They say it's time, and then he gets sent into a room where I guess you hope he was killed, but he is not.
Damn. I was hoping they could all just stay there in their basement forever.
That leads us into a hardcore title defense from the Road Dogg against Al Snow. I thought this was so much fun. Like, this is now we're getting into the territory of these hardcore title matches are completely different from other stuff on the show. They battle all around the arena. They're doing various stuff. And then they end up out in the snow outside where Jack Doan can't even keep his feet from sliding on ice. And in the end, Road Dogg hits a pile driver onto a wooden crate in the snow to pin Al Snow. And then comes back and the crowd are just like going crazy for him after this match. So I guess they kind of did the job. I enjoyed it, but I'm curious, what did you think of this hardcore match?
It was fun enough. The hardcore matches are full of kind of, you know, shenanigans and brawling all over the place. And it is different to what we normally see on the show. Al Snow still hasn't washed, right? Like, isn't he still covered in blood?
Still covered in blood, yeah.
So I don't really know what's going on there. But he just keeps wearing his bloody clothing. And I don't know, like, Al Snow has not been that compelling as a wrestler, but he is kind of compelling as a character, right? Like, he's crazy and Head is, like, shaved and looking disturbed and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting to see how Head kind of, like, mirrors the inner torment of Al Snow. Road Dogg is a lot more fun in this situation. Like, because you said that I might enjoy him more as hardcore champion than as a New Age Outlaw tag team champion. And I think you're right. Like, I think this is more suited to his strengths because he's not great in the ring, but he is a very charismatic performer. Like, he dances at people and he has catchphrases and he, you know, like, I don't forgive him for taking away the beautiful, beautiful song of With My Baby Tonight. And he doesn't sing it anymore. And that makes me sad. But I don't know, like, he does seem a lot more fun in these circumstances. And I watched this, like, full disclosure, like, I watched most of this episode and then, like, watched Wrestle Kingdom live and then needed to finish watching this episode because we were supposed to record a few days ago. And so by the time I got to this, it was like 8 in the morning. I'd been up all night. I was pretty drunk. And the idea that Al Snow was brawling in the snow just ended me. I just cracked up. I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. It's really not that funny. It's a visual pun, but it totally worked for me. I was like, Al Snow is in the snow. Ha ha ha.
But I mean, another example as well, it's like they saw Road Dogg's weakness and hid it more with the hardcore belt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. This is the point where we see the Acolytes throw Dennis Knight into the weird room. So then we see Shawn Michaels is going to leave to get the Stone Cold surprise. DX wish him well. And then as he leaves, Triple H kind of suggests that things might not turn out that well. And then the key line, I guess, is X-Pac says, "What goes around comes around." We see Michaels trying to get in his car, but he's not got the right key. He goes back to kind of be like, "Hey, guys, this is the wrong key." And then he turns around and the corporation are there and the corporation annihilate him. We actually see him getting partly beat up, which, with the fact that he was about to go into back surgery, I'm surprised that we saw that. But and he was taken out. So I'm curious. I know he's not worked for you as a character, but obviously they tried to tease people that he was with DX, but ultimately it was DX luring him in and fucking him for what they did to him. What did you think of it?
I mean, can he just go away?
Thrilling analysis, Sandra. Thrilling.
Well, I'm sorry, but, like, I don't like Shawn Michaels as a character right now, and especially if he's going to come in, pretend to be with DX, not be with DX, turn on DX, then he's, like, turning on the corporation, then DX is with him, but no, DX is not with him, and ha ha ha, and oh, he's getting like, it just seemed kind of obvious from a mile away that DX weren't actually going to be on Shawn Michaels' side here, so I guess it was kind of nice to see him get his comeuppance and get what he deserved, but I don't think that's how I'm supposed to feel about the segment. Like, I think I'm supposed to probably feel sympathy for Shawn Michaels, but I don't.
I mean, I think it's actually more nuanced than that. Like, because I like the idea that, you know, X-Pac was the one that he fucked over. If people forget, X-Pac was in a world title match with The Rock and was going to maybe win the title, and Shawn Michaels fucked him in the last second. So it makes sense that he was the one to say, you know, what goes around comes around. And but at the same time, yeah, you're right. Then later on, we see him laid out and it's like, well, now Shawn Michaels has kind of fucked himself because he's now got nobody. No, you know, DX have pretty much said, you're not with us anymore. We don't want you.
I guess I just don't understand the point of DX, like, trying to lure him in for approximately like 45 minutes. Was that like, oh, we're going to win your trust over for 45 minutes, so then when we turn on you again, it'll be real emotional.
I think it was legit, just they wanted people to keep watching and see what happened. That was the goal. And it worked, because they ended up winning the rating. But the real reason they won the rating is because the main event is Mankind and The Rock, but Tony Schiavone, I don't know exactly when on Nitro, but Nitro were winning the rating for this week. They had the main event, which was going to be Hollywood Hogan as a babyface against Kevin Nash as a heel for the world title. There's a great part where Goldberg had been arrested for...
Wait, Hollywood Hogan was a babyface?
Briefly. Here, he turns heel in the match. But basically, there's a moment where Goldberg is arrested for trying to sexually harass Elizabeth, even though he did not. And then they say that when eventually he gets bail, he can't make it back to the arena. The problem is, they did show that the police station was across the road earlier in the show.
Amazing.
So the main event is Hogan and Nash. They go to face off. But anyway, so about an hour before, or half an hour before, whatever it is, Tony Schiavone says the famous phrase, "We've heard that Mick Foley, who used to wrestle here as Cactus Jack, is going to win their world title tonight." Huh, that'll put some butts in seats. And almost immediately, everyone just turned over and watched Mick Foley win the world title.
Because they were like, wait, Mick Foley winning the world title? Because it does come out of nowhere. Like, Mick Foley was not set to have this title shot earlier on.
No, exactly. And then, so then we get to the Hogan and Nash match, where, so bear in mind, this show was in the Georgia Dome, 36,500 people paid, with a 42,000 attendance.
Wow.
They were winning the rating. And they, so then the angle that they did was the finger poke of doom. Hogan and Nash face off. Hogan finger pokes Nash. Nash lays down for him. Hogan wins the title. They're all still in the NWO. They all fucked Goldberg. Mm-hmm. So, but what we're going to do, I'm not going to have this conversation now, because the narrative that WWE and a lot of people put out there is that the finger poke of doom killed WCW. Actually, not the case. Finger poke of doom was an angle that led to some good stuff in January of 1999. So I'm going to wait until the Royal Rumble review that we do with Finn, because Finn has a theory as to what really was the downfall a few weeks later. So I'd rather let him go into it. He was covering it at the time more than I was, and I didn't even watch all of it at the time, so I watched bits and pieces. So I'm curious to listen, because I've not heard his full take on it. But the narrative they try and spin is the finger poke of doom was the worst thing they ever did. But actually, it wasn't. The finger poke of doom set up a bunch of heels that Goldberg would work his way through to get to Hogan.
Well, and also, it's not like WWF hasn't done its own versions of the finger poke of doom in the past, mm-hmm. right? Like when Triple H faced Shawn Michaels for the European Championship, for instance.
Finger poke
that's
of doom,
the
yeah.
same thing. That's the exact same match. So it's, I mean, I know that isn't in the main event for the WWF Championship, but it's for a championship in the WWF, and it's not like they've never done it before.
But
so
it
I
did,
guess, like,
but it did lead to eventually Austin beating Michaels and him losing his title. So eventually,
right.
But whereas with WCW, that is not what ends up happening. Goldberg gets part of the way through and never really gets to what should have been the outcome. So that's the real story of what was the. But you know, they were going to win. They were going to win this rating, and they decided to send people to the WWF. Like I think what baffles me about it more is that if this had been like Al Snow is going to win their world title, I would totally get it. I'd be like, yeah, like, why? Well, that's stupid. But, like, it's Mick Foley. People love Mick Foley.
People do love Mick Foley. And even though, like, this did, I mean, I said it before, it did kind of come out of nowhere, and Mick Foley doesn't necessarily feel like a WWF champion, he is one of the most popular characters on the show. And, I mean, as we've been going through this Retro Raw journey, he's been my favorite on Retro Raw, right? Like, pretty consistently. I didn't like Dude Love very much, but since he's, I don't know, kind of since his involvement with Vince McMahon, which I kind of hate to say because it lends credence to the fact that, yeah, like Vince is a very effective TV character here. And Vince can be used as an effective TV character, you know? I think the story between Vince McMahon and Mankind really made Mankind more sympathetic and made him such an interesting and well-developed character that seeing him get a thing and seeing him win a thing is going to feel like catharsis for an entire audience who, like, if you're a weird kid and you identify more with Mankind than Stone Cold Steve Austin, yeah, you're going to want to see your hero win a title. And, you know, having the guy who isn't supposed to win things win the big one, right? Like, yo, Adrian, he did it. That's beautiful and that's lovely. And it's kind of like Zack Ryder winning the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, right? Like, it didn't end up very well for Zack Ryder because obviously he lost it the next night to The Miz. But he got that moment, and it was a really feel-good moment for everyone in the night. And this kind of was a really feel-good moment for everyone on the night.
Yeah, it was. So we get Mankind versus The Rock. Mankind have got D-Generation X in his corner, which obviously has been played up over last week and on Heat to now. The Rock has got the corporation with him. So the full match is just big match atmosphere. The fans are really into it. The fans are very much behind Mick Foley. And it all breaks down. The Corporation DX are fighting. Mankind and Rock are down. And Austin's music hits. And like, I feel like if I was in the building for that, like that would have been one of those, like, did we just shake slightly? Like, did the building just shake? And, you know, we were talking about this kind of on Facebook, but I like the idea that, you know, one of the things Mankind always wanted was to kind of be accepted by Steve Austin. Like, that was one of his things. And Steve Austin came out and assisted him to win his world title. He, you know, hits Rock with a chair. He leaves. There's a great moment. I love when Billy Gunn runs 100 miles an hour to Ken Shamrock to knock him out or to knock him down. It's so good. But
and it kind of furthers that Billy Gunn Ken Shamrock dissension, right? Which I'm into. Like, that's one of the stories that I'm actually super into on Retro Raw right now.
Yeah, and so Mankind, after Rock gets hit with the chair by Austin, Mankind puts the hand over. 1, 2, 3. Fans go apeshit. Mankind is the World Wrestling Federation champion. Like, say what you will about stuff that you like in wrestling or don't like, or stuff that you see that goes viral that you like or don't like, but like, wrestling's at its best when characters play the characters they're supposed to be and you buy into it. And like, Vince and Shane after this are so good at like Shane is just this petulant child screaming how angry he is. Vince McMahon is enraged that Mick Foley somehow has like captured the one thing he thought he was never worthy of. And Mankind's running about like he's won the World Cup and talking to his kids about daddy did it and stuff. This was, I have more love for this than I can express. What did you make of the match, the outcome, and Mankind getting his big moment?
I was glad that they declared the match as no DQ beforehand, because obviously there were going to be a lot of shenanigans. I guess the only, like, the only nitpicking downside for me is that it didn't really feel like Mankind won the title. It felt like everyone else kind of won the title for Mankind. But in a way, that's kind of lovely, because Mankind has been on this quest for acceptance, right? Like you mentioned, him wanting to be accepted by Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's wanted to be accepted by DX. He's wanted to have friends. And it's kind of nice to see people actually sticking up for Mankind, whether it's because they actually like him or because they're anti the corporation, whatever. It's just kind of lovely to see friendships in wrestling work. And so that part of it was really good, even though, like, there's a part of you that's like, I really wanted Mankind to like win it with the mandible claw and all that kind of stuff. And it ended up being more like by virtue of Stone Cold Steve Austin. But one of the things I was worried about when Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, did the chair shot to The Rock and everything was like, is he going to hang around? Is he going to make it about him? And like, Austin's music was definitely playing for a little while because, you know, he is Stone Cold Steve Austin and he's the most popular one on the show. Obviously people are going to want to see him, but I really appreciated that they, like, Austin went away, they faded his music out, they played Mankind's music, and Mankind got a lot of time in the spotlight after this. And it felt like a really big moment. And it was cathartic, and it was lovely. And even though it was, like, very early in the morning, and I hadn't slept, and I was pretty drunk, and I was just like, I want to go to bed, I was really excited about it. Because it's lovely to see Mankind finally get a thing, and to get the acceptance of the people that he wants so badly. And sometimes it's just really, really nice to see people who you don't think are going to, you know, be in the spotlight, get their moment to shine.
Yeah, it was so such a feel-good moment. And like that, like, this is like my favorite thing in wrestling is when there's like 20 people who are all over involved in something that's all bonkers and mental, and deep within it there's like a good story where you get to be happy. And like, that's what they did. They furthered Austin McMahon here. They furthered Mankind and McMahon. They furthered DX and the corporation. They furthered Billy Gunn and Ken Shamrock. They furthered like 100 things at one time, and it all made sense. It all kind of fit.
It was all interwoven very, very well in the main event, for sure.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the kind of, like, that's the perils of Vince Russo, right? Like, look at this main event scene that he's created that's like really compelling. and then he books miscarriages as well. Like, what's the... If MD ever points a sign to, like, well, when Vince Russo's on his own, he does great. It's like, no, he's not. Like, when he's... I feel like I'm seeing the stuff where he's collaborated with people, and then I'm seeing the stuff where he's, like, argued for 3 hours about how good a miscarriage is going to be, and somebody eventually just lets him do it to show that he is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Like, fall on your own sword here.
Yeah, exactly. So what would you... Where would your thumb be for this one? Middle, down, up?
You're going to hate me. It's a thumbs in the middle episode.
I won't hate you for it.
And there was some stuff that was really good, but there were just... Like, it's just so much corporate authority stuff, and, like, the storyline not really lining up there kind of took me out of parts of the episode. And then, I mean, it had the stuff with Terry Reynolds on it. It had, like, the weird China Mark Henry stuff. I don't understand. I'm just baffled by it. So it didn't really, like, leave me intrigued, because I'm not dying to know who her friend is. I'm not dying to see a three-way video of, like, Mark Henry, China, and whoever this other person is. So I think there was some dross in it, but I think the main event storyline was a really great through line, and seeing Mick Foley win the title was awesome. It's just there was a lot of stuff before it that, like, some of it was middle of the road, some of it was fine. Like, I liked Edge and D'Lo Brown, but then it had to be interrupted by a terrible, terrible angle. So I don't know, like, it was kind of up and down for me, but in the end, like, the final moment was awesome. If I were judging it on the final moment, which I think is how a lot of people judge this Raw, then it would be an absolute thumbs up. But I think because of some of the other stuff not clicking for me, it's a thumbs in the middle.
That's fair. I mean, it's got a miscarriage on it. There was always a danger.
Yes.
yeah, I thought this was a thumbs up show, not just because of the last part of it. I thought the Shawn Michaels DX McMahon stuff really worked for me. I thought it was really good. I liked the idea that there was a nuance to it, and that, you know, DX were luring him in to kind of fuck him because what he did to them. I liked all the stuff with Mankind throughout the show, of, like, him, you know, basically getting fucked in the qualifying match, then using Shane as bait to get to the main event. I thought the main event was good. I thought the hardcore match was really fun. I liked Kane beating up the Stooges. I thought the Billy Gunn Shamrock stuff from the IC thing and backstage was good. The only real kind of dross on the show for me was the Mark Henry stuff, which was just kind of there. I didn't love it or hate it. But really it was the miscarriage and just the miscarriage, really, which was the real downfall of humanity. So
it really was. I mean, it's also signaled that we're going to get more Dennis Knight in my life too, and I don't really appreciate that.
Maybe you did something really bad in a past life.
I don't know.
But to play us out, we're of course going to play the theme tune of Mankind. He is the new World Wrestling Federation champion. Huzzah. What a great story with Mankind and Vince
So
McMahon.
Excited for Mankind. He won a thing and it's so lovely.
You got one more year of him. Enjoy it.
I do love him so much.
So we will be back soon with more. Sondra, what are the plugs?
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, for tons of bonus content. Power Slam podcast a day early, Power Slam Overrun. We talk about pay-per-views, all of them, classic, retro, current pay-per-views. All of that's on patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for interview content. There's a bunch of good stuff up there. Jesse Ventura interview is going up later this month, you said, which I'm actually really looking forward to. I want to see it. Yeah, tons of video content over at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes and insidetheropes.co.uk/is it just /Goldust for tickets for Goldust?
Yes. We were going to put insidetheropes.co.uk/theartistformerlyknownasGoldust, but it was too long.
I mean, that's a shame. But yes, insidetheropes.co.uk/Goldust for tickets to see Goldust on tour. There are 5 nights. I can't remember where they all are. But it should be an awesome show. Like, that's one of the ones I'm super, super intrigued by, actually.
It will be pretty interesting. So thank you for listening to us. We hope you have had a good new year. There's so much wrestling stuff going on. Join Finn and I on Wednesday on Patreon, Thursday on the main feed for the Power Slam podcast. Join Sondra and I later this week for the SmackDown Summary. And then we'll be back later this week with the next Retro Raw from January the 11th, 1999, where I'm pretty sure we get the outcome of... Let me just check actually what we get next week. So next week we have to look forward to We get the New Age Outlaws.
I'm intrigued.
Against, New Age Outlaws against Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart. We get, oh my god.
Okay, oh get, no.
We get a thing. X-Pac defends the European title against
We get a thing.
I'm not talking about it. Well, it's a surprise. X-Pac versus Al Snow for the European title. Mankind versus Kane for the WWF Championship. Triple H versus Edge. And there is a very, very... Yeah, there's something McMahon-related that I think you might like.
Okay.
So that's all coming next week.
I'm intrigued, for sure. I'll have to get on watching the episode fairly soon.
There you go. And we get the return of one of Sondra's favorites. A.K.A. not one of her favorites.
Oh, no. Is Dennis Knight back?
He's involved in it.
Ugh, gross.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye!
Bye.